This call is being recorded.
Hello?
Hello? This is Brad Jolly with the Ponca Tribe.
Jim Cavanaugh with Sierra Club, Nebraska.
This is Sheila Corbine with Fredericks, Peebles, and Morgan.
Danelle Smith with Fredericks, Peebles, and Morgan.
This is Jennifer Baker representing Yankton from Fredericks, Peebles, and Morgan.
Hi, this is Liana Sikarjing on behalf of Santee Sioux Nation.
David Corbin, Vice Chair, Nebraska Sierra Club.
Hey, this is Lorna, Oil Change.
Michael O'Hara with Jim Cavanaugh and Sierra Club.
Doug Hayes at Sierra Club.
Brian Jordy.
Hello.
Director of Cultural Affairs for the Ponca Tribe of Nebraska.
Shannon Wright, Zippo, Ponca Tribe of Nebraska.
Hello. I got William Kendall from the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. Eric Antoine with the Rosebud Sioux Tribal attorney. I'm going to transfer your call into for them to get on conference with you guys. Hold on.
Hi, it's Kathy with Sierra Club.
Hello, this is Willie Kendall.
Here.
Hello.
Hi. A whole bunch of us on.
Okay, we just got you on a speakerphone. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, who do we have on the line with us?
Sierra Club.
Okay.
There's about 20 folks on the call. Hey, this is Mark from the Bold Alliance. We've got about 20 folks on the call. It's a range of attorneys, Bold staff, and a bunch of different tribal representatives. We're just kind of queuing up and waiting for folks to join the call before we get started.
Okay. We'll hang on then.
This is Ken Winston. Who's leading the call?
This is Willie Kendall at Rosebud. I'm the tribal chairman here.
Okay. Great.
Did you guys get snow at Rosebud?
Yes, we did. We had probably about 3 inches.
Has it melted off or how are things?
Yep. It's pretty much gone today because we were up in the 60s today. So it melted pretty quick.
That's good.
I think we're about to the end of our winter season, though.
Well, I hope so. Need for the flowers to bloom and the grasses to grow.
Hey guys, sorry I'm late. This is Jane. I was finishing up another call. So who do we have on? I heard Ken.
Well, this is Willie Kendall at Rosebud, tribal president.
Hi Willie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good.
You guys are
all about 20 or more people on that we just kind of threw.
Okay, so if you guys have already gone through that, that's great. The call is being recorded, so we have that as well. So we wanted to hold this call so we could get a handle on some general, making sure, one, everybody knew the dates of the hearing, which is August 7th through 11th in Lincoln. going to be held at the Cornhusker Marriott. We don't know yet the dates of the public hearings along the Keystone proposed route, where the public will be able to give comment and not go through the whole discovery process, et cetera, like all the interveners. When those dates are published, we'll certainly want to do a planning call or even a planning meeting about how we want to, you know, work those. The last time around, when the State Department did several hearings in our state, we organized them, we meaning Bold Nebraska, with a lot of the Native allies and other kind of environmental climate groups. And they were all really successful and really showed the strength of the pipeline fighter side of things. So we'll just want to replicate that and even go beyond that and come up with some really creative visuals and designs. But that, you know, that's not for this call, but I just wanted to make sure that that's on your radar, that when we get those dates, that'll certainly be something that we want to organize.
Sure.
But on this call, we really wanted mostly the attorneys to talk about their main focus that they are going to be doing discovery and providing evidence on, because we want to make sure that there's no big gaps. And if there is big gaps, so that we know that, so then we can go out and find the proper experts to cover that. And then, to, of course, find then the funding to cover those experts to come in and submit the evidence. So I don't know if Ken, Brian, if you guys wanted to go first. Brian, since you're representing all of the landowners, if you wanted to talk about the main kind of areas that you're doing and areas that you think right now are needing experts.
Well, you know, I think a better thing that I might do is email anyone who's interested or who wants to help out kind of an outline of all the areas that we're considering. And the most important takeaway is all of us might want to talk about certain things that we have interest in or are passionate, but at the end of the day, this is completely different than the last time around. And by the way, if anyone who's not talking, if you want to mute your phones, would be really helpful. It's going to be totally different than the last time around. We have an audience of 5 people, and so we can do all sorts of things, but if we're not tailoring our message to affect the opinions and beliefs of those 5 individuals, then it's frankly not going to be helpful. It might make us, you know, feel good, but at the end of the day, we're trying to win. And so I'd urge people to be focused on that. And what I will share is, I went through the statutes. I went through exactly what they're going to be looking at, and I've summarized that, which I had included in our petition and intervention, and then kind of categorized that under the big categories. And then under each of those is where we're going to have to develop testimony and or experts. So I'm not going to run through all the experts we need right now, but the best thing from my perspective from representing the landowners and based on the rulings of the PSC, we are going to have the largest voice in this, whether rightly or wrongly, and it looks like the informal or non-affected landowner interveners are going to have a very narrow time limits, like 1 hour, to talk about their issues in a 5-day process at the actual hearing. So therefore, I'm respectfully requesting help from everyone on this call where you can help so that we can divide up the work and kind of specialize in certain areas and kind of everyone stay in our own lanes and then bring it all together in August and then present it just like we would at a trial with different experts and different groups and different lanes. And so I just want to put that out there because I don't see there's any other way on this truncated time schedule that's incredibly aggressive that only gives us a couple months to seek all the information and discovery from TransCanada that we want. And then we have to develop all our testimony and have it in writing well before August. We can't just call witnesses and start asking them questions. So we're under an incredible time crunch. And all of you, you know, have your core competencies, your subject matter experience, the experts you can rely on. And we all have to really focus on what we know and stick to that. And so I think that's probably the best I can do on this call. I don't think it would be productive to go through every single expert that I think we need. I'd rather put that in writing and then people can chime in and say, hey, I'll take this role, or I'll do this, or I'm willing to help here. So that's the way I prefer, Jane, to do it going forward.
No, and I think that makes sense. Oh, wait, just let me say one thing, Ken, and then I'll throw it to you.
Yeah,
just to give people like an example, and Brian can send around what he submitted to the PSC on behalf of the landowners. There's, you know, points of information that we're going to need to then back up, right, of what we're asserting in the document to the PSC. For example, one of those is the market need for Keystone XL. And so, you know, Lauren Stockman, who's probably on the phone for Oil Change, has done a lot of research and work into that. And so it's just, you know, that's one example of something that we need an expert on, and that we need hardcore evidence, not just us saying that it's an export pipeline and we don't need it, but having evidence to back that up. So that's just one example. Ken.
Yeah, and I guess I just wanted to follow up on what Brian said and say that I do think the core of this matter is going to be the case that Brian and Dave Dahman are going to be presenting, and because they've been given latitude to present evidence on all issues, and so we need to be supporting that. However, I also need to point out, just following up on that, I mean, just, well, supporting what Brian just said and indicating that we need to be supporting their efforts however we can. The other thing that I wanted to bring up is the fact that Bold and Sierra Club filed motions yesterday to ask the PSC to reconsider its order regarding intervention. And so, because there are procedural issues with the order that was entered, and so we will be exploring further options in that area, challenging the procedural, what we believe are procedural defects in the order that was issued. So just want people to be aware of that. The third thing that I wanted to mention is, to the extent that the so-called natural resources interveners have been lumped together, we're going to have to figure out, okay, is there an issue that we really have some expertise on and that will really bring something to the table in this case, and we need to all coalesce around that and work together on that issue, because we have been severely limited in our ability to present evidence under the current order of the PSC. And I know there's going to be some more conversations about setting up calls or meetings to facilitate that coordination.
That's perfect, Ken. Go ahead.
Sierra Club, and I had a question. Under petitioners asserting economic interests, you have the Midwest Regional Office of Labor's International Union America, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and the Union of Associated Journeymen and Apprentices of the Plumbing and Pipe Fitters. Are any of them likely to bring up economic issues other than from a pro stance?
I don't know if you're on a speaker. It's really difficult to hear you. I made out what you said. I know all those union heads, and they will be speaking on behalf of TransCanada and about the economic benefits that they will be bringing.
And therefore, I'd suggest that one of us has to be an intervener on the side of the negative for economics.
Yeah, I think that is a good idea. And I don't know if Sean Sweeney is possibly on the phone, but he's one that we've written down on like a brainstorm of experts that we know that we have at our fingertips, with reports that he's written with Cornell University Labor Institute to counter some of the job numbers and economic activity that TransCanada and sometimes unions claim.
Hey,
one of the things,
Jane, I just wanted to let you know that Kendall with 350 is on.
Hey, Kendall.
Hi, sorry, I'm late.
One of the things that I wanted to also do on this call is to really talk about the tribal intervention, and it was such a key part of how things moved forward in South Dakota and the tribe. Just a reminder again to put your phone on mute when you're not talking. It was a key part of the South Dakota intervention, and I think really bought a lot of time. The PSC and the State Department, as well, the tribes on the phone know this, but just to reiterate, there's never been a cultural resource study of the Keystone XL route in Nebraska. So the Ponca Trail of Tears, for example, has never been studied, verified, brought forward as something that is at risk of this proposed route. So I was hoping maybe some of the tribal attorneys could talk about some of the things that they're looking at, and also in that same vein, what resources you guys either already have or things that you think need to be in place in order to present a credible piece of evidence in this process.
This is Brad, an attorney for Ponca, and that's one of the things we were looking at right now. I think I looked last night to see where the pipeline would cross the Ponca Trail of Tears, and based on the map I was able to put together, it looks like it definitely will. It may even run along it for a bit, their preferred route in the south half of Antelope County. But actually, the current pipeline also crosses it. And if they take that alternative route, looks like it would actually add an additional crossing. It looks like it comes out a little bit from the current pipeline and then goes back. I don't know if that's maybe for a pumping station or something, but that would cross it again. And there are actually, I think it gets really close to some sites that I know are at least noted in historical documents of where, for example, the chief standing bear had been on certain dates. But yeah, I think I agree. I actually want to hear from our the tribe's culture director and THPO are on the line, and they are talking exactly about that. If we, you know, somehow doing that some sort of cultural property survey, but it is a serious resource issue. How we can go about doing that. I think we looked, and yeah, I think if I remember, I think Transcan said they had actually surveyed like 40% of the route or something like that, and that was it. So I'm looking at trying to focus on that a little bit in discovery, figure out exactly where they've looked and things like that. But certainly I think let Randy kind of continue on in terms of what he needs in order to help build on that case. Are you there, Randy?
I'm here, but I had to step out for a second, so I kind of missed some of that, Brad.
Oh, I was just saying that we were looking at where it crosses the where the pipeline would cross the trail, and you were looking at how they had only looked at 40% of the route, but trying to identify what that 40% was, and that you thought we should get sort of a full TCP survey of the route if we can.
Right, and I do agree with that. You know, first I wanted to say that, you know, they have sent a letter saying that we denied consultation, and that never happened. You know, so that's something in itself. And I had expressed that several times to the Department of State, Mark Kessel, and their attorney. But as I know right now, there was one route that I think they might have did some TCP survey on. But then there was an additional route, and then now we're looking at another different route. So I know the first route, that wasn't all completed in any fashion, nor were we allowed to do our own survey. That is something in itself that I think, you know, from looking at some of the EIS today, the only amount of survey work was done was only like 1,000 some acres that was completed. But I didn't know if that was the whole thing, and still 40% of it, you know, I don't think is sufficient. The other part is, you know, the cultural context to these. These guys are determining the eligibility and things like that. But, you know, where does the cultural context come into play? As far as STPO, we have our own, you know, as a Ponca tribe, we have our own
way to do thipples, our own methodology. That doesn't match theirs. You know, we didn't call these things sacred sites. We called them what they were in our language. You know, so how does somebody else put that cultural context to that and determine ineligible or unevaluated? So I still think we need to determine our own TCP survey, because at some point, you know, there's stuff out there that we might not even be aware of, or other tribal people might not be aware of, you know. So that's something in itself that I think needs to be addressed.
I completely agree. I mean, this is Jane with Bold. I really think that the Ponca Trail of Tears is one of our strongest arguments that is well documented. And we used one of the older maps from the Ponca tribe 4 years ago when we decided to plant the Ponca sacred corn in the proposed route where we thought, according to this map, the Ponca Trail of Tears was being crossed. And that's on Art Tandarup's land. He's one of the landowners. We've held a spirit camp there with members of the Rosebud and Yankton Sioux and several others as well. And that's where Willie Nelson and Neil Young did their concert that 1 year. So I think there's a lot of potential there for us to be lifting that up. But we definitely need the TIPO workers to be out on the proposed route doing studies now, and need to hear from you guys on how we can make that happen.
So on both of that, Jane, thank you for mentioning that. Because on that, you know, one of those proposed routes goes right down our trail.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the map that you were referring to. Now, even if they go with a proposed route, it still crosses our Aboriginal territories, and then it crosses that route again. You know,
mm-hmm.
and a significant part about us having to do our own TCP survey, you know, we have that connectedness to the land, to these sites. Culturally and spiritually. The part about it that, you know, that I just found out is along that Trail of Tears, we have another Ponca member that had passed away that we buried that nobody knew about until just recently. You know, so those type of the things that, you know, I think that need to be addressed, you know, because as far as us, you know, we were terminated for 30 years. Some of our culture went to sleep. So if we're back out on that land, you know, and if we can gain access to this land to do our own TCP, you know, prior to anything going on, we can identify those sites. And, you know, hopefully with identifying them sites, that might, you know, stop some stuff.
You know, Randy, that was one of the thoughts I had is, and I'm glad you brought that up about that recent discovery, because it's one of the things I think that while it's crossing that trail, I'm wondering if we could present at least a sort of expert testimony on the risks of finding human remains, because there were a lot of people who passed away on that route, and they and all of their sites have certainly not been identified. We know there are two or three markers I think along the trail of burial sites, but I'm not sure there's ever been any sort of survey to determine, you know, other burial sites along the trail, has there?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, and I'm wondering to what extent we might be able to put together something that would, you know, analyze sort of the risks that they would uncover human remains and tribes' ancestral remains along that route.
What are some of the other, Jen, if you're on with Yankton Sioux or any of the other tribes, what are some of your guys' thoughts?
This is Jennifer Baker for Yankton. We are kind of a half step back, I think, from where Ponca is in that we are still trying to specifically pinpoint the ancestral lands of the Yihongtawa and Yankton. You know, most of what I'm getting is oral history. We've tracked down some really good sources that I haven't had a chance to look at yet. We're hoping they'll give us a little bit more definitive of an area. But we don't have specific sites. The fact that the land has never been surveyed is of great significance to Yankton because it is ancestral territory. And there are sure to be sites there. So if a TCP study could be done, that would be enormously helpful. My concerns about getting a TCP study are that most of this is not federal land. So I'm not sure how that would go, how that would be able to come about, because you're going to run up against private owner interests, which generally are going to trump here. So basically,
no pun intended.
Right. So basically, we're still doing some homework and some research. And if the THPO on the line or anyone else has suggestions on good sources for that type of information, I'd be very open to them. Of course, we're working with Yankton's TIPO, and he has some sources, but we're still trying to track everything down.
This is Randy with the Ponca Tribe again. I wanted to just kind of touch on a key point of that. You know, and for us, like I had indicated, you know, we were terminated for 30 years. You know, and Brad mentioned it too. You know, not everything was reported, so that's part of the problem. You know, so if it wasn't reported, you need to get out there and identify it. However, they're trying to throw it as this mitigation plan or the unanticipated discovery. The problem with the unanticipated discovery is when they're tilling up the land or moving earth, you know, they're not going to know it's there until after they already destroyed the site or burial or whatever it is. So that's one of the things that, you know, I think we need to kind of stay on top of and figure out a way around that.
On certain of the landowners' property, so, you know, 90 so landowners, we do have good relationships with them where, you know, Brian and I and Ken would be able to work with those landowners. We know them very intimately and have known them, worked side by side for the past 7 years on this. So I feel like along certain parts of the route, now that's not going to be every portion of the route if you're looking on cultural maps, and maybe a landowner had signed, but even some of those landowners we know and like a family member who had more say in the property signed and they're still friendly landowners type thing. So I feel like we'll have some, I feel very confident about getting on land that we'll need to in order to do these cultural studies. But I hear you about we don't want to happen what happened up at Sandy Rock, that they documented their sacred sites and then the oil company workers went and destroyed them. That's the last thing we need happening.
This is Ken. I've got a question. One of the things I'm wondering is, if it would be appropriate for motions to continue. I guess I'm just wondering if it's going to be feasible to determine the things that you're trying to determine within the aggressive time schedule that the PSC has laid out. I mean, the discovery is supposed to be all served by May 5th. I'm just asking the question. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, this is Brad again. I think it is I think our discovery has to be served on TransCanada by the 5th.
Right.
And I don't know that we'd have to have, for example, TCP survey done by then. I mean, one of the things, like I think I mentioned, I'd like to do in discovery is try to drill down into the details of what actual TCP surveys or any surveys, what areas have been surveyed by TransCanada along the route, because I don't think we've been able to find that detailed information even in any of the EISs. It just mentions that 40% was surveyed, which I think is wholly inadequate. So I think we could, you know, still be working on the TCP survey even after we've served our discovery. But yeah, I agree. It is a really tight deadline. I was even just talking to Jennifer about considering maybe trying to do an initial set of discovery and then see if I could maybe follow up by the 5th with a second set, depending on their responses, or perhaps doing requests for admission at that point or something like that. I guess the harder question is, would we have to have that TCP survey done in order to disclose it to them by their deadline? And I'm trying to look at my calendar here. I'm not sure. I guess I don't think I put that on my calendar. Do you remember when the deadline is for TransCanada to serve discovery on us?
June 5th.
I like your suggestion, Ken. I'd like to hear from some of the other attorneys too, of potentially asking for a continuance, essentially arguing that there is no cultural study that the tribes are aware of that's ever been done on the proposed route, and that we have to do that before the PSC process can continue. I don't know what other lawyers think about that.
I think Yankton would certainly be open to that.
I definitely think it's worthwhile. I guess my question would be, is it something you think we'd be able to get, given that they're on such a limited time frame? They can go as late as November, as I recall, isn't that it?
Well, they can extend it up to a year, up to a year on good cause, and I guess I would argue that if important cultural sites had not been surveyed, that sounds like good cause to me. And if they blow their nose on it, then you've got another reason to appeal. I don't know what all you need to find out and what the time frame is, but it just sounds like it would be hard to get all that information in the time that you're talking about.
Yeah. Randy, do you have an idea on the kind of time we'd be talking about?
Depends on how many acres that we're going to survey. What does that consist of?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, I would think it would be, almost from the time it enters into Nebraska until it exits Nebraska. So that's, over 200 and some miles.
Yeah. I think you need to not just do where the pipeline's laying, but anything they're going to be using for construction as well.
Right. The timeline ends at 8 months, not 12 months, because that's for a prohibition. If you ask for a continuance, you're not moving that deadline. And evidently, at this point, there is no study, and a study is needed, then the study that has been done is deficient, and the petitioner wins. If you do a study after a continuance, the interveners could lose because there is an adequate study.
Are there other kind of lawyers representing tribes on the call that want to either talk about this particular need, the need for a cultural resources study along the route, or other issues that you guys were already thinking about you were going to bring up?
Oh, one thing I think it's a little separate. We were talking about it earlier, the challenges to the intervention order. And I am working, I'm hoping to get it by the end of the day filed, because the tribes also, I think Yankton filed an objection to the, or a motion to reconsider the intervention order limiting us, and I'm working on one as well, in part because they limited the Ponca tribe to social and cultural issues, but in our petition to intervene, we did not just discuss the social and cultural issues. The routes of the all the proposed routes go through some of the tribe service areas, and although it doesn't hit any of the trust land, those service areas are there is at least one federal decision that says they're to be treated like an extension of the reservation. So we had kind of brought up the idea that it does touch on the tribe sovereignty and self-government, and certainly in that respect should bring the tribe within at least natural resources, environmental, and economic issues as well, since it's going through its, federally recognized territory, basically. So the tribe may be able to expand into some of those areas as well, depending on what other people working on those issues, can utilize to help bring the tribe in on those. But that's assuming we can get that that order changed.
And we agree with that message.
Are there any other attorneys on the line, interveners, that want to lift up what they're going to be focusing on in the process so other people know?
Jane, this is Jennifer. I have kind of a non-specific to tribes question, but I'm sure you all have talked about it. What is the story with them still having alternative routes being considered, yet the final route has been approved by the State Department? I mean, if they were to take another route.
Yep. We actually have some legal memos on this from when we were battling at the state of Nebraska when we didn't have a law yet on the books about approving a pipeline route that goes through our borders. So the State Department wrote to us, and then the Congressional Research Service backed it up, saying that the State Department actually does not approve state routes, that it is up to the state to approve their routes and to go through that, that they certainly look at the routes and look at any environmental concerns on the routes, but it is up to the state to determine the state route, and that the State Department is only giving a permit for the cross-border crossing.
Okay, so in that event, the FSEIS it would no longer be good if they picked one of the alternatives, because the FSEIS wasn't valid for, you know, those alternatives. They didn't look at those.
That I don't know about. I think it's definitely something to, yeah. I mean, I think it's definitely a good argument to be putting onto the table.
Food for
thought.
The State
Department might argue. Yeah, I mean, the State Department might argue that they've looked at all those routes because they, I mean, none of the routes that TransCanada has proposed are new to any of us. But in the current application to the State Department, I don't even know what route TransCanada submitted, if they submitted all three.
Okay.
And write the FIPO for the Ponca tribe. We're trying to figure out if are they going to be doing another EIS for these new routes as well?
No, not the Public Service Commission. The Public Service Commission's not. And the Public Service Commission, essentially, and Brian and Ken, you guys know it better than anybody, but they're going to be taking evidence from all sides and then deliberating based on that evidence. And they can either approve one of the routes that TransCanada has submitted, reject them all, or by law, they have to look at existing corridors that a pipeline company already has, which is what I think is a very viable outcome of this process, is that the PSC could force TransCanada to twin Keystone 1 with Keystone XL.
Yeah, that was one question Jennifer talked about, is does the commission have the authority in Nebraska to put conditions on the route, for example, like requiring them to have tribal monitors and things like that along the route, or is it just an approval of the route without any conditions?
I think it would be just that one.
Yeah, so Ken or Brian, do you guys want to answer that?
Yeah, there's nothing in the statutes or in the MOPSA, the Major Oil Pipeline Siting Act, which is what this is based off of, that I'm aware of, that says they can affirmatively add conditions. Now, obviously, that doesn't prevent any of us from arguing it, and I think one of the arguments is, you know, in South Dakota, they had 50. The PUC up there added 50 conditions, and to me that would kind of be the standard of care or best practices, and that should just be where we start this process, and then add from there. But I think that's going to fall more into argument, and it couldn't be in the public interest if we don't at least have these 50, you know, standards, etc.
Right.
I think that's the way we have to get at it.
All right, good.
And I agree completely with what Brian just said. The statute just doesn't specifically outline them, but it's appropriate to ask for them.
Okay. And that's good, because that was a consideration, I think, that we had, that it may be somewhat of a backup argument, but if we can at least
try to do whatever we can to protect cultural resources, for example, along the during the construction, so that they're not destroying them. That's at least something. And I know we did receive actually a letter from the State Department today that they're also going to come back and do more consultations with tribes and I believe other groups as well once they've received a construction plan from TransCanada.
Well, they do have to comply with all applicable laws, rules, and regulations, and so they, to the extent there are other laws that may require them to respect the to do the things that you're asking for, I would cite that in your in the reason that you want that to be a condition that's imposed on the on the pipeline.
Yeah, it's something I've been considering, and I guess it may come down to discovery too. I noticed that they did note some federal and state lands that the pipeline is crossing, and thinking there may be some. I can't remember now. Does the Siting Act just require that they show compliance with state laws or all applicable laws?
I believe it's all applicable laws.
Because if it is, I'm wondering if we can pull on maybe ARPA and NAG for anything, at least along those federal and state lands, and see if we can find some compliance issues there. Because a lot of those federal laws on cultural resources are limited to federal and sometimes state public lands. But since they basically have said in their application they are at least crossing some federal and state lands, that is something I think I was considering looking at for the tribe to see if there's we can pull on any of those to sort of help bring in those cultural resources issues and maybe show that they haven't complied. Because I seems to me their application, I mean, they didn't mention cultural resources at all, even though it has been part of all the environmental impact statements. And I believe there's a Nebraska statute on archaeological resources as well. I haven't had a chance to look up to that. I'm wondering if we can pull on for any sort of compliance in that respect as well.
Yes, there is. And the I don't have it in front of me, but I know there is. And the statute says all applicable state statutes, rules and regulations, and local ordinances.
Okay.
57-1407.
So they may not even look at the compliance with federal law then.
Well, I think you can still, I would still argue it.
Yeah, I think it's worthwhile. But yeah, I think, and then I think, like I said, but that's one of the reasons I think I'm going to look at that that Nebraska archaeological statute, because if we can pull in a state one that says they haven't complied, I think that'll be helpful. And then, you know, tie it to the federal ones as well. But I'm not sure what the scope of that Nebraska statute is.
Chad, what about ARFA?
Yeah, that's exactly that too I want to look at. But I can't remember, this ARFA I think is a federal lands one as well, isn't it? Only federal lands? I think so too, but that's where I think where I noted that they did say they were crossing federal lands, where I think I want to try and pull on those as much as possible, especially if they have not surveyed those lands, and certainly there hasn't been a TCP survey on those lands. And I think in discovery should ask exactly where those lands are. You know, another thought I had is, you know, the commission does have the authority to. Request reports from other agencies, and I was wondering if there's a vehicle to sort of get them to bring in, for example, I think especially with the Ponca Trail Tears, something from the State Historical Office, a report to help bring in maybe some of these issues and get some of the information that we need from those agencies. And I don't know. I mean, I was thinking, There may be nothing in their rules. I don't think there is, but I'm wondering if it's worth filing a motion to say that we want them, that they should request something from some of these other state agencies.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good idea, especially because the Indian Affairs Office in Nebraska over the past year, because it's our 150th, you know, celebration, has really been at, like, you know, the governor's had them at every event and highlighting them. And so it's like,
yeah.
now's the time to actually show that you actually do care about Native history.
Right. So I don't know. I guess some of the other attorneys maybe know the commission better. Would it be appropriate for us then to file a motion to that the commission, you know, request those reports from some of those other agencies?
Well, this is Brian. I would only yes is the short answer, but the longer answer is I would be careful of requesting something and then it's not being there, and then the commission seeing that as definitive. For instance, if you know the State Historical Society finds nope, absolutely no record of anything, that's going to be it. It would be more effective and persuasive if the study could be done outside of any state intervention and then force them to rebut it rather than giving them the opportunity to cut the argument out on, because of course they're all under the thumb of our governor. So that would be my only caution.
No, I think that's a good point then. I think to not worry about that. You know, that is one thing too. I noticed Nebraska's EIS does have a list of cultural resources, but they've marked it as confidential and privileged. And I don't know, Randy, have you figured out if there's any way we can? My assumption is they've made it confidential and privileged because they probably did identify tribal cultural resources somewhere along the route. But I don't know, Randy. Do you know if there's a way we can ever get, you know, that actual list?
We can only get lists that pertain to our tribe.
Okay.
So, you know, there might be other tribes out there that have stuff, but they won't share that information.
So basically, we need each tribe maybe to go through and ask for that list. Okay. Well, that may be something then that the tribes may want to jump on then, because that's my guess is that if they made it confidential and privileged, that suggests to me they did identify tribal cultural resources, and I think the tribe should at least know what the state has identified. And I think that goes to the same thing. If they've identified them, they're going to have a much harder time coming back and trying to say, no, they don't exist, if they've already put it in their EIS.
Those rats probably weren't from the survey. Those were just sites that, you know, have been discovered throughout. You know, for example,
right.
Uncle Fort would have been listed, you know, but that's, you know, public information.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But I'm wondering if there's something else that isn't public information. Otherwise, why would they not release the list? But I think you're right. They would be things that were identified, but it'd be nice to see what they've identified as those sites. Because, yeah, I agree. I don't think they did a TCP survey for it.
They didn't. This is Russell
yeah.
Eagle Bear, Rosebud Sioux Tribe, THPO.
Hi, Russell.
Anyway, you know, the process they used was they went through a record search, and anything that the state identified, they did take some monitors out in those areas, but none of the quarter was actually walked, even by their archaeologists. We found a lot of discrepancies, and we have those documented here. Here in South Dakota, to our tribal boundaries. So, anybody wants to contact me, we can certainly share some of that information.
I think one of the things that we need to determine as a team is, do we think an in-person meeting is necessary to plan out deeper strategy? That's number one. And number two, do we want to hold conference calls like this? And, you know, in South Dakota, they did them on a very regular basis as they were getting ready for hearings. So like once a week or once every 2 weeks. I was curious as to what people's suggestions were on how do we stay as a close-knit team so we're getting all the evidence that we need and all the experts we need lined up.
This is Chairman Wright for the Ponca Tribe. If you do hold an in-person meeting, we'd be happy to host it. we could do that in Norfolk if that's more centrally located for people. I know that's not ideal with everybody's schedule, but if you decide to get together, we can do that.
I would second that. This is Randy and Shannon.
I think an in-person meeting is warranted. You guys are lawyers. You guys should know better. Somebody could be listening in on you.
Especially on this issue.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I will get with Chairman Wright and throw out a couple possible dates, and then we'll just go with consensus for an in-person meeting. I also think it's really critical that we start to get some TIPO workers out on the route. So I'm not sure as to next steps on that. If the tribes want to visit and tell us what plots of land along the route you guys want to go through, and then Ken, Brian, and I can get permission from the landowners, or if there's another process we should be following. But I know that I'm anxious to get started on that.
Yeah, as long as you can get permission, that's what we ran into here in South Dakota.
Yeah, I feel good about getting permission. Brian and Ken, you feel the same for the landowners, obviously, that we know.
Yes.
Yes.
Sure. Go ahead.
And then I think, you know, to this call, we recorded it. Nobody said anything, you know, so to this list, I can send that call around. Paul Blackburn, the lawyer for Honor the Earth, couldn't be on, so he wanted to listen to the recording. And then Brian, can you send around the documents that you have that list the specific things that you think that we need to be providing evidence to that you submitted to the Public Service Commission? I think that that is also a document. I know you're going to go individual to people, but I think that's a document that we should all be reviewing over the next couple of days and really letting this core team know what areas each person can take responsibility for so we can start delegating all that work.
Yes, I'm going to modify that and then I will send it around.
Okay. And then Mark, you should have gotten a Google group invitation. So not everybody has to keep on copying the like 30 emails. So please make sure that you accept that.
I was just going to say, I haven't sent that yet, but just heads up, I feel like maybe three or four of the folks have received it who were on the original intervener list, but everyone who is on this call should be receiving an email. It's an invitation to join a Google group. There'll be instructions on it, but you just need to accept that invitation. And then instead of multiple email threads or super long things, you can just send an email to that address for the group, and everyone who is on the list will receive a copy, and all replies will go to the entire group.
Great, and I think that helped the South Dakota team stay organized. And so lastly,
Jane?
Since we're coming up, oh, yep.
This is Danelle Smith. I'm on the call on behalf of the Winnebago Tribe, and I just wanted to mention a couple of things. So the Winnebago Tribe, is obviously not an intervener. And since since Nebraska is not the historical home of Winnebago, we feel like the tribe's ability to, I guess, have standing as an intervener is rather limited. But the tribal council is very interested in being supportive and helpful where it can. And so I'm interested in learning, I guess, how the group thinks the Winnebago tribe or, anyone else who may not necessarily have lands that are in the area where the pipeline route, proposed route crosses, how we can be helpful. So whether that be, from a legal standpoint or just developing strategy on bringing folks to the public hearings, that type of thing, those are things that we are very interested in learning how we can support that. And then the other thing is when you came and met with the Winnebago Council last week, I know there was some discussion about a consultation meeting coming up in Lincoln where many of the TIPOs are going to be present. And I wondered if that might be a good opportunity or time frame to get people together if many are already gathered in Lincoln during those days.
You know, if
I agree.
Thank
mm-hmm.
you,
Russell.
Thank you, Danelle. I'm sorry, this
yeah,
is Chairman
thank you,
Ryan.
Danelle. Sorry, Chairman Ryan. I didn't mean to speak over you.
No, I didn't mean to speak either. But I like Danelle's request for that, and if that's something that we need to hold separate from the state, because I know the state's putting that meeting on, we could after that meeting's over. We can move that over to our tribal office if the TIPOs want to come over there, so it's separate from the state. And if we want to have that meeting, we can make that happen as well.
I think that sounds a great idea. And Russell, I know that you're a TIPO worker, so you knew about that meeting then. Were you planning on being there? I was curious if they were just reaching out to Nebraska folks or if you knew about it too.
No, we are aware of it, but I didn't plan on going.
If we hold a meeting at that same time for all of us, could you come down for that?
Yeah, when are we thinking? When is that meeting?
I'll send it around in the notes. It's May
okay.
11th.
Yeah, we can look at the timelines. And...
Okay.
May 11th and 12th.
12th and 13th is a meeting for the NAGPRA Council.
Oh, 12th and 13th.
Sorry, 12th and 13th.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Harold Frazier, Chairman of Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. I got the time wrong, so I just joined. I'm sorry about that.
You probably just
Hi,
got
Chairman.
Up, eh?
That is perfectly fine. I did record the call, so I can send you that recording, but we'll send out some notes. This will be the first of many, you know, calls that we do with each other. I think the most important thing for this call was a couple things. One, making sure that you guys knew that we were going to do this Google group in order to stay in touch with each other, so make sure you accept that invitation. Second is we're going to plan an in-person meeting so we can talk maybe some more confidential strategy. There's been some confidential ideas that I think people want to put on the table. It's not appropriate for a phone call. Third, we definitely want to know what tribes want to do. What tribes can have their TIPO workers do a cultural study along the route and to start identifying the areas along the route that you would like to study. So then me, Ken Winston, Bold's attorney, and Brian Jordy, the attorney for the landowners, can get permission from the landowners so we can start doing that study ASAP. Sorry, Chairman, this is Jane Klebb. I met you very briefly in D.C. Standing Rock. Yeah.
Yep, you bet.
And then I think the last thing is, many of you know we've been doing this event for the past 4 years where we're planting the Ponca Sacred Corn, that we also got certified by the USDA as Ponca Sacred Corn inside the proposed Keystone Route where the Ponca Trail crosses in Neely, Nebraska. So we're going to be doing that again this year. This will be the fourth year on May 21st, and I'll include all the details in an email to everybody. But we would be honored to have as many of the chairmen and representatives of the tribe, grassroots leaders at that event to not only plant the corn, but we're going to be planting trees where the pipeline would potentially come into the land on this piece of property and some other events. So I'll include that information to hopefully have everybody there. And if we get a critical mass there, we could also plan a meeting at that time as well.
Yeah, I think tonight at, Cheyenne River is going to start planning strategies, so I kind of like what you're saying. I think that it should be different areas, and I've even talked, you know, it's going to cross the Cheyenne River just by less than a mile from our reservation. So I want to kind of jump on that, too, and all them sacred sites up the line.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I think somebody should walk that whole thing.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. I think Russell Eagle Bear and Steve Vance.
They're the best, right? So they get nominated.
Well, speaking of walking, this is Chairman Wright again. We'll be doing our remembrance walk at the end of April and in the first 2 weeks of May. And so I don't know if any publicity wants to be shared during that walk, how we might do that. I would entertain any suggestions or recommendations. I mean, we don't want to lose sight of why we're doing it, but we also want to point out what this pipeline means, and we're going to be talking about those affected ground right there as we do that walk. So I don't want to get out over my ski tips, and so if there's a strategy that we can utilize to do that doesn't give away strategy that we're discussing as a group, or things that what message do we want to put out during that time. And so I would welcome those kinds of things, and it doesn't have to be on the phone call here today, but just know that we got that coming up in 2 weeks. And so we have media scheduled to be there, and so we can take advantage of that if we want to.
Perfect. And we want to try to keep these calls to an hour, so I'm going to try to wrap this up, but I did just want to recognize that we have a lot of the climate groups obviously on the call who've been, you know, carrying a lot of the work that we've done to stop the pipeline, and the PSD's not specifically said that they are addressing the climate impacts. And so there's going to be more creative ways that we're going to have to address that issue. But I just wanted to make sure before we close the call, Kendall or anybody else with the climate groups, if there's anything that you guys wanted to address before we close.
Yeah, thanks, Jane. This is Kendall. I felt like this call was really helpful. Thank you all for letting me listen in. And I think as we at 350 are figuring out kind of what we're going to be able to do with the intervener status and how we want to be working that kind of external game to bring climate into the message, you know, it'll be good to be joining these calls and getting updates from y'all about what the different approaches are looking like. So thanks, everyone.
Hey, this is Lorna Oil Change. Also, thank you very much for setting up this call. It's been really interesting. There was one question I had. I mean, Ken, I'm going to be really looking to you for this document you said you're going to send around in terms of the things you think this panel are going to be interested in. But one thing I was just wanted to flag up is, can we ask TransCanada in Discovery for the shipping contracts? Because as far as I know, they don't have any. And it would be really useful at this point, or as soon as possible, to find out if they actually have anyone who wants to ship anything down the pipeline. It seems extraordinary to me that they got a permit for a pipeline that they don't have any customers on. Even FERC wouldn't issue the permit like that. And I don't know if that's a issue for the Nebraska PSC or not, but it's certainly one I'm interested in.
Well, I would argue that it's relevant to whether it's in the public interest. I would certainly be interested in Brian's thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, I think the direct answer is because I was on the phone with their lawyers before we had this call, and their view is very narrow, where, of course, we're trying to broaden the inquiry, and we certainly can ask those questions. One of the statements or one of the provisions of one of the statutes is essentially something that says major oil pipelines are in the best interest of Nebraska and the country, you know, to help with the country's energy needs or meet the needs of increased energy. And so I think we can probably backdoor a request on that basis and then try to prove that they have, you know, virtually no customers, and then get to the point that therefore there is no necessity and there is no interest. So, yeah, we should definitely go that route.
Right. And this is Paul Blackburn. I managed to jump on. Sorry I'm late. Yeah, we tried to get that kind of information in a number of cases and generally have been unsuccessful. At the same time, we certainly should ask. If we get it, there's a very good chance it'll be subject to protective orders. And I think some people maybe remember at the South Dakota PUC when they put their expert on the stand on to talk about the contract. When we tried to cross-examine him, they actually pulled him off the stand, which is extraordinarily unusual, and it provides a sense of how sensitive they are to not want to have anybody ask them about their contracts, because, as Lauren said, there's a good chance those contracts are dead or nearly dead.
Yeah, I mean, and this is maybe a discussion for later on, but, you know, I just wonder about the precedent for that. And, you know, with the gas pipelines we're dealing with in Appalachia here, FERC, you know, those details are totally public and out in the open. Like, we know exactly what percentage which company has booked with which pipeline, you know, how many billion cubic feet a day they're planning to ship. You know, I don't know. I know in the past that they've kept that stuff really tight. And I mean, maybe we don't even need to know the details. You know, can they not be forced to at least disclose to the PSC what percentage of capacity is booked so far, or, you know, any kind of, you know, they don't have to tell us exactly who it is.
Let me do some checking with the kinds of things that the gas pipelines typically are required to disclose. And I'll get back to you.
Yep. And we know what their original contracts were on case, not the individual companies, but the total volume. We knew that from the original cases back in 2008, 2009. Whether all those contracts still exist is an open question. And some of the contracts were also signed with Cushing companies back when the first Keystone Pipeline was done. So those contracts presumably have continued to go because they're delivering to Cushing right now.
So we're going to send some notes out and some dates of some things that are already on the schedule, and then possible dates of meetings. And Brian's going to send his document around, which I think is going to be a good starting point for us all to then coalesce around. You know, with this fight, it's like all ideas are on the table. And there's been some really good ideas over the past couple of weeks of new and creative things that we can try to do in this process as well as outside the process to put some political pressure on the PSC. So don't ever think an idea is stupid. We had in a bar one night, decided to build a solar barn inside the path, and that barn's still standing with solar panels. So you never know when an idea will strike. So I just wanted to make sure to close on that, like keep the ideas flowing. We need ideas not only in the PSC legal process, but creative ideas outside the process to put that political pressure on the PSC to make the right choice. So thank you for getting on, everyone. This will be the first of many calls we do, and looking forward to stopping this pipeline for the third time with all you guys.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jane, everyone.
Thank you.